We're just kind of walking through some ethical things, and you know, I want to preface this with, this is not an extremely comprehensive Sunday school lesson, and it is not, you know, I've got what I think are some appropriate Bible principles, but I'm not trying to expound all of the Old Testament texts that deal with technology, because there really aren't any, but at least not as we would think. But we do live in a world that is changing drastically, and is really experiencing a revolution in the way we think about the world, and the way we access the world, and the way that we process the world. And of course, I think that part of a standard disclaimer that I must make is that, you know, I am bringing the perspective of a guy of my generation to this. But I'm really not sure where to insert this. I mean, it's not... how many of you know who Logan Paul is? Seriously, hands, big hands. How many of you know who Logan Paul is? You probably have seen Logan Paul for his being on national news. Logan Paul is one of the top YouTube celebrities. And he was, one of his claims to fame was doing a YouTube video of staging his own homicide. But he made national news because he was in a forest in Japan where people tend to go to commit suicide, and he actually filmed the body of somebody who had hung themselves, and that created a little bit of a scandal. But according to the list from the all-knowing and all-encompassing Wikipedia, Logan Paul is number 40 on YouTube subscribers with 16 million. The number one YouTube celebrity in the world is a man by the name of PewDiePie, PewDiePie. He is, I think, from Sweden, although he does most of his webcast in English. He has 60 million subscribers. So there are 60 million people who around the world who have signed up to receive YouTube posts from him. And a growing number of young people don't watch TV, they watch YouTube. The media that we would receive from traditional, you know, big three channels or cable channels, they're accessing through YouTube. And some of these people, they're gaining cult celebrity status. And, you know, it probably wouldn't come as a surprise to us. And by the way, this has become, the provision of these services has become big business all by itself. Some of the three of the largest music labels in America have banded together to found a network called Vivo, and they're producing these. So it would not come as a surprise to us, for instance, that Justin Bieber would have 33 million subscribers, or Taylor Swift 27 million, or Rihanna 26 million, or Katy Perry 26 million. And these are put out by these big production companies, like the big record labels, this Vivo. So you have just all kinds of these things. And that world is drastically changing. USA Today had an article this morning. Last quarter that they reported, Apple, in its services division, and its services division provides iTunes, they have a musical subscription service, you can buy extra backup storage if you want to do that. Their sales for the last quarter were $8.5 billion. That was a 30% increase over the prior year's quarter, and so Apple is on track to do just in its iCloud storage, iPhone update services, buy a song from iTunes. They are on track to do somewhere between $40 and $50 billion per year in service revenue, McDonald's sells about $25 billion worth of food total across the globe. Apple is on track to do $1 billion a week. $1 billion a week in that kind of revenue. I mean, these kinds of things are virtually inconceivable to us. On obviously a much smaller scale. We now post, whoever preaches for Westwood Heights, which is normally most of the time me, we have now our own, we're on sermon audio, and we have our own, is it called a channel? It's not really a channel, whatever. We have our own little, you can go to Westwood Heights Baptist, and there we are, and there's Westwood Heights, and there's me. So Kyle sends me a report. last month, okay, now this is, I mean, this is really small potatoes, all right? But last month, 23 different states and people from 17 different countries listened to Westwood Heights Baptist Church. 17 countries. I mean, you know, 25 years ago, folks, I mean, we don't have to go back to the 19th century. 25 years ago, this kind of stuff was inconceivable. I remember I was having a conversation with somebody this week, and we were talking about the book of Revelation. And there in Revelation chapter 11, when the two witnesses are killed, and the Bible talks about the whole world watching. And remember how we used to go, I don't know how that's going to happen, but it's going to happen. And now we know exactly how it's going to happen, don't we? Everybody's going to look at their phone. And they're going to watch it on their phone. That's how it's going to happen. Or at least that sure looks like it's how it's going to happen in February of 2018. And I just throw some of that stuff out there because we really do, as a ministry, I think to some extent, I know, we find ourselves kind of wrestling through this from a ethical, or if you prefer, a philosophical kind of standpoint. Right? And I guess my position would be, and it's a pretty broad territory that I'm carving out, I certainly can't conceive of any kind of a scenario in which we would create our own YouTube channel to do stupid things in the hope of gaining fame. You know, pastor's going to jump out of an airplane and preach while parachuting to the earth. Not going to happen, by the way. Not the least of which is because jumping out of an airplane is not even on my bucket list. It's not even on my after the bucket list of things to do. So we don't want to go to that extreme to where we're sitting around trying to figure out how to be cutting edge and gain an audience just through the technology. On the other hand, and I think in churches like ours, what is much more inclined to happen is to dig in our heels and treat all of it as an evil that needs to be kept out of contemporary ministry at any cost. And I don't buy into that either. And I guess that's, you know, so what I would try to do would be to argue for a biblical philosophy of approaching that kind of stuff. So, all right. So, and some of this we did we did some stuff on conscience a couple of months ago. And as always, and I just throw this out because you can access it and I think it's worthwhile, whenever I'm interested in these days in trying to get a perspective on what's going on in American culture and the world around me, I always make a beeline for Doug Wilson, his blog and May blog. he's Presbyterian. We would have some disagreements on, you know, eschatology and ecclesiology, but I just don't think anybody from a conservative Bible-believing position has any better comprehension of the intersection between the Bible and this world. So when we talk about culture, right, and somebody has defined culture as the things that we do not need to explain to each other. When we talk about culture, in the widest possible use of the word, we're referring to the way that we use God's creation. Okay? Culture, cult, cultivate. These all go back to a Latin word that has the idea of something that had to be tended. right? You worked at it to make it grow. So God created a world that is filled with natural resources. Again, some of this I'm just kind of, are you cold? Are you comfortable? Okay. God created a world filled, last time I asked that question, I was like running 102 fever, so I want to be careful. I don't think I am, but God created a world that is filled with natural resources, and you can go back and read about that. It's pretty easy, really, I think, to just kind of, you know, read right through that in the Genesis accounts, you know, it is part of our responsibility then as managers of God's earth to mine them, harvest them, use them in a way that glorifies God. And we're going to take a Sunday school class and talk about the ethics of environmentalism. But this is part of the task that was given to us as God's creation, to make use of the natural resources that God had provided. There was a garden. Adam tended it. There's gold in the ground. Somebody's got to get it out. And our responsibility then is to use them in a way that glorifies God. And I would put glorifying God in this context in what do we mean by that? In a way that reflects our right understanding of where they came from and what their purpose is. Right? And the conflict in that is seen. I think this is part of the condemnation that comes in Romans 1:25, who changed the truth of God into a lie. And what Paul is arguing there is there was a trade that was made. There was an exchange. They traded the truth for a lie. And they worshiped and served the creature, and that really refers to the creation. And again, without going down that big environmental road, you know, I think we certainly biblically have some obligations to keep the world that God made clean, but we do not have any responsibility to worship it. The earth is not our mother, all of the environmental protesting that is going on needs, you know, we need to look at that for what it is. And again, I mean, you know, do we want to just pollute cavalierly? No, we've been down that road, but the earth is ours, and the fullness of the earth is the Lord's, and it is for our use, and we have been commanded to be good stewards of it. So again, walking through some of this we just dealt with. In order to access and use God's resources, we invented tools. If you listen to Wilson on this, he will point out that your hand is a tool. And I think it's pretty hard to argue with that. And God himself gave us the means to communicate information to each other, which is language. Right? We are, by nature, communicators. Our children begin to talk even before they can be understood. Because this is a reflection of our creation. God, right? I mean, Jesus is the Word. He's not the stuff. Right? I mean, in the beginning was the stuff, in the beginning was the matter, but in the beginning was the Word. And God is verbal. And this information then comes communicated to us through some form of medium. And again, to go back to the Latin, medium is the Latin word for middle, and it came to mean the intervening substance, which is why we talk about media, print media, film media, now, internet, you know, YouTube. And again, these things really, you know, it's always dangerous, right, when you begin a sentence, when somebody begins a sentence with "when I was a kid." But, right, television was three channels, CBS, ABC, and NBC. And remote controls had first names. Right? Ken, go put on channel 7. And, I mean, that was the world that it was. And then when the UHF channels came out, this was colossally good news. And, you know, within a relatively short span of time, even in the framework of human history, Everything is right there at our fingertips virtually 24 hours a day. Everything. Everything. So medium matters. And, you know, we're pretty comfortable with print media. Right? Paper Bibles. Hymnals. Newspapers. I was having a conversation with my U.S. history class last week, mostly 10th graders and 11th graders, about newspapers. And one of them said, the only time we get a newspaper is when Grandma and Grandpa come to visit. Yeah. Yeah. So when we traffic in that world, and, you know, a couple of years ago, we went down to Kansas City for the teachers' convention. The president of Bob Jones was talking about that when he was a student of Bob Jones and the chapel speaker said, turn in your Bibles, you know, you heard, and he said, now it's just dead silence. You know, thousands of kids in the chapel, you say, turn in your Bibles, and it's, everybody's looking at their tablet or their iPhone. And we're not always very comfortable with that, are we? I mean, there's not any point in lying about it. Right? I mean, when I talk about upgrading the sound system, okay, there are two conversations I keep having over and over again. Number one is, are you going to wear one of those little microphones that goes in your head? And number two is, are we going to get rid of the hymnals? I mean, that just seems to be, so am I going to wear one of those things that goes around my head? Yes. And I'm going to rejoice that I'm all done tearing up suits and ties with alligator clips that go on them to wear a microphone. And are we going to get rid of the hymnals? No. But this is where we are. We have a lot of angst about things like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and so what would be an ethic to bring to that kind of mentality? To go back to me, right? So from print media came radio waves. So we have programming and telephones. How many of you? And I'm just asking. Okay, I got no agenda here. How many of you no longer have a landline? Ours goes away Friday. And I'm just letting you know that. I don't know that we get a lot of calls on it, but our landline is going away Friday, so we are done. This has nothing to do with anything apart from we have the added delightful benefit that our home phone number is the toll-free number to a large medical center here in town. And we get calls at our house every day. And I'm not exaggerating. My wife could tell you. She even keeps a file because we actually get faxes. We probably have enough confidential faxes that we have kept to imprison a number of high-level medical people in this city. There's got to be some violation of HIPAA that I know who you are, what's wrong with you, where you live, and all kinds of stuff like that. And that is just that has been a never-ending source of frustration for thinking about selling back the medical information. So we just, you know, so for us it was just we just finally got tired of that. Right? Then we come to the television, which, I mean, let's be realistic. I don't want to say we have mixed emotions about TV because most of us have a TV and watch it at some level, but very few of us think of TV as being a viable way of conveying our message. And of course today we have the internet, and then, you know, the conjunction with the internet, which is smartphones and, you know. And as you can imagine, all of these things have changed, you know, the dynamic of the world in a million ways. I have no idea what, like, Millard Public Schools or Omaha Public Schools policies are concerning electronic devices in the classroom. Did you let them have them during tests? I mean, what?
Oh, no.
No.
No, but, you know, I just talked to a teacher this last week out of Delaware, and she is doing things with their devices in class. And before, we had to run everything through a lot of people, and we could only use... They still make them check all of the... they have to run through our tech people, all the websites they use, and anything that they're going to have in class. You know, because there's just a lot of junk out there, too. But, you know, I always told them, you know, a lot of teachers haven't checked them in because you can look up the verb etra on your phone. I mean, that's pretty easy to do.
Oh, man, Google Translate has got to be the eighth wonder of the world.
Yeah, and one of my kids showed me one of the classes that we had a passage and we were working on it, a section of text, and he said, look at this, and he put his phone over it, and he showed me the translation, and it was good.
Yeah.
And I said, had you turned this in, I would have known it was not you.
Yeah, but that's only because you know the student, right?
No, I did.
You know, this has been going back. This was going back when our son, who is now 35, was in school. I had the kids write a report, and I got a report from a guy who was talking about the trans Asian, I think it was like the trans, and I just went to him and I said, you don't even know what trans Asian is, do you, or whatever it was, you know, and he goes, I said, yeah, it's cut and paste, you know, Wikipedia to the rescue, so.
It really is getting integrated into the classroom now.
Yeah.
The new textbooks we ordered had things that were done on smartphones.
Oh, yes.
And when I left, that was going to be
right, and that freight train is racing 1,000,000 miles an hour. Right, that freight train is running 1,000,000 miles an hour. So, you know, I teach economics, and so, you know, there's a lot of, with the internet now, there's a lot of open source, open courseware. So you can go to Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and you can watch on YouTube a microeconomics lecture given by John Gruber. Now, John Gruber's real claim to fame is that he was one of Obama's advisors on Obamacare, and he has now been publicized as, you know, he's the guy who told the Obama administration, well, you're going to have to lie to the American people about the cost of this. But so he's talking, now this is a guy, he's got to be 20 years younger than I am, and he's talking to a class of people that are 40 years younger than I am, and he's talking to them about the economics of letting price allocate value, and he was talking about going to a concert. And he said, so when I was a kid, if you wanted to buy concert tickets, you went out and you got in line at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you paid the price. Right? He said that was the way that we allocated the resources. You were willing to pay the price, you know, to get, you know, so, but now, so he just said to this class, and he's got 200 kids, he said, how many of you have ever stood in line to buy a concert ticket? You go to Ticketmaster. You buy your tickets at Ticketmaster, and that's, so, you know, that whole world, and a lot of that stuff we use and embrace, you know, and I realize I'm speaking very generally because, you know, some folks are just not going to go down that road no matter what. Some of us, right, some of you have had it forced upon you, right? You know, your work has said, here's a smartphone, or you're going to do this, or, you know, you're going to do this. I live across the street from a public school teacher, and a couple of years ago, he was just shaking his head because, you know, the school district where he works said, okay, you're going to have to start emailing the parents and communicating with the parents in email. And he's just going, oh, I just don't want to do this. I just don't want to do this. So but this is the world that we have. And I'm just curious now. And again, I have no agenda here, folks. You know, I really enjoy the technology. I don't understand most of it, so, you know, it's pretty easy to make fun of me. But how many of you use an electronic Bible when you come to church? I'm sure. Put your hands up, okay? Sure, because I'm going to ask you both ways. When you come to church, use an electronic version of the Bible, okay? How about at home? Yeah, right? I preach from a paper Bible. I haven't read from a paper Bible at home in I don't even know how many years. Just, right? You know, when my wife and I used to go somewhere, it was go to the library, get a big stack of books, you know, pack the suitcase full of books and stuff, and now you take your tablet. And you can still go to the library and put all your borrowed stuff on your tablet. And if Google Translate is the eighth wonder of the world, Amazon Kindle has got to be 8.1 of the... So. Okay, so anyway, I better get into this, work into this, okay? So I would argue from a philosophical standpoint, folks, with reference to this explosion of technology, that every generation of people has still come up against the same challenge. The abundance of technology may certainly changes the way we look at the challenge, but the challenge is the same. Okay, and Ravi Zacharias said this, and I think it's a really good point, that, and I think he would probably say it even a little more emphatically than I put it up here. One component of every sin is violation of purpose. Right? God created something to be used in a certain way, and we use it in a different way, and that's part of what makes it a sin. And so when we use or value things that is contrary to God's purpose, which is why I would go back to, right, how do I use the creation to the glory of God? I understand where these things came from, and I use them in accordance with their proper purpose. And I do that with right respect to God and gratitude to God. And I have therefore glorified God by putting him in his proper place. So when we use or value things contrary to God's purpose, there's wherein a significant part of the sin lies. Turn, if you want, to 1 Corinthians 7:29 through 33, and we will. I'm trying to remember. I know we'll be in 1 Corinthians 7 when we talk about a divorce and remarriage, which I think is next week, but. I don't know that we'll be in verses 29 through 33. But this I say, brethren, the time is short. It remaineth that both they that have wives be as they that had, though they had none, and they that weep as though they wept not, and they that rejoice as though they rejoice not, and they that buy as though they possess not, and they that use this world as not abusing it, for the fashion of this world passeth away. But I would have you without carefulness or without anxiety. He that is unmarried careth for the things that belong to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he that is married careth for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife. So in the course of this, and actually 1 Corinthians 7, I think, is not even primarily about marriage, although it deals a lot with marriage, but it is primarily about where God has placed you in this world. And so in the course of this discussion, Paul points out the necessity of properly valuing things in this life. Right? And so this is part of what he's arguing, that human relationships and possessions are fleeting and should be valued as such. Okay, if you take that and you read that kind of mentality back into Jesus telling me that I must love him more than I love my family, we get some understanding. Right? It's not love me, hate your family, but assessing properly where the value lies. And Paul then points out that things of this world may be used, but they may not be used or abused. And again, that's not a blanket statement. That is not saying everything is acceptable to be used. But God has created a world in which things are to be used. But they're not to be abused. And when they take on the supreme value, then they have been abused. And then he goes, because the fashion of this world, what is exactly the word that he uses there? For the fashion, verse number 31, for the fashion of this world passeth away. That word fashion there is the word scheme. Right? This the scheme of this world is passing away. Right? So when we go to the other side, right? I mean, we have marriages here, and we have much biblical instruction about how to interact with our spouses and how to treat our spouses and how to love our spouses and how to be kind to them and what the obligations are. But when we cross over to the other side, folks, those marriages are gone. Those marriages will be consumed, so to speak. Right? So I want to be the best husband that I can be, but I want to be the best husband I can be in light of being a biblically obedient husband, because the biblical obedience is going to outlast the marriage. So using the world properly is the goal. And turn, if you would, to 1 Timothy chapter 4. Once again, right, Paul is First Timothy chapter 4, verse number 1. Now the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron, forbidding to marry, and commanding to abstain from meats which God hath created to be received with thanksgiving of them which believe and know the truth. For every creature of God is good, and nothing to be refused if it be received with thanksgiving. For it is sanctified by the word of God in prayer. If thou put the brethren in remembrance of these things, thou shalt be a good minister of Jesus Christ, nourished up in the words of faith and of good doctrine, whereunto thou hast attained. Paul is concerned with this same kind of thing, of properly valuing purpose, which is something that false teachers get wrong. Right? The Spirit speaks specifically, pointedly, deliberately, that some are going to be seduced to depart from the faith. What are you going to teach? Don't get married. What are you going to teach? Don't eat that. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with going to the pulpit and teaching somebody that God said, you can't eat that? What's wrong is that God said, yes, you can. Now, we'll get to this when we go to food, folks, because we're going to do a thing on food. But to put it on a very sharp point, God doesn't really care what you eat. God cares how you eat it. And so that will be the subject matter for that day. But how we eat matters way more than what we eat to the Lord. So we always want to be careful there. We always want to make sure that we're thinking not only about what we're doing, but what about the purpose of what we're doing. What is the purpose of the thing that we are using? Why did God give it to us? And we need to be always aware that the violation of purpose is part of the sin. So, okay, so just a couple of practical things then, you know, okay? First of all, my goal, at least, is to make sure that I am making the distinction between the media and the technology itself and its impact on my sin nature. The smartphone is really not the problem, folks. The smartphone is really not the problem. Sin does not reside in stuff. Sin resides in hearts. It registers on stuff, but the sin is not inherent in the stuff. The stuff is stuff. So, I can sin in a car or with a car, and I can do good with a car. But the car is not the problem. I can go on Facebook and be inappropriate, but Facebook is not the problem. If I'm inappropriate, I'm inappropriate wherever I am, whatever media I'm using. Now, Facebook might have a wider audience, but Facebook is not the problem. We want to make sure we make the distinction between the media and the technology itself and its impact on our sin nature. Our sin nature is a problem. Okay? But on the other hand, we do not want to pretend that the tool is without impact. Okay? We don't want to pretend that. I can be inappropriate, right? And by writing letters. Right? I mean, I could write a letter that is a rant against the church. And that letter is going to go to as many people as I send it to and as many people as they show to. But that's never going to reach the same audience as if I go on Facebook and post a rant about the church. So I don't want to pretend that the tool doesn't have an impact, because it does. Okay? It's pretty hard, for instance, to go back to something we all understand, to argue that television doesn't affect us when advertisers know differently. Right? I mean, we can go, it doesn't matter what I see on TV, but I don't know, what's the going rate for a 30-second commercial on the Super Bowl tonight? Anybody know right top of their head? Is it 5 million? Right? I mean, I may go, what I see on television doesn't bother me a bit. But Budweiser doesn't believe that, because they're willing to pony up millions of dollars to get me to watch their commercial. So, right? So we're always, folks, kind of holding these things in tension. Where is sin really? It is in Ken Largent. But what is the nature of the flesh? Well, it's going to take advantage to misuse whatever is at hand, and you know, right? So, I mean, you know, we could go like this, right? What do we say? Guns don't kill people. People kill people. That's true. It's also the reason why some people shouldn't be allowed to have nuclear weapons. Because you can kill a lot more people with a nuclear weapon than you can with a gun. So, the sin is in me, and the tool is not without its dilemma. For instance, and I would recommend this book. I would have brought the copy, but I have mine on Kindle, so that would be pointless to kind of wave my tablet in the air and go. But a guy by the name of Tony Reinke wrote a book called 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You. It's a pretty short book, pretty good book, 12 chapters. Right? When he gets to the end of the book, he argues, right, this is about our phones and, you know, our teenagers, and our teenagers, I'm assuming, are not really. If our teenagers are different than other teenagers, it is probably that statistically fewer of them have smartphones than other kids. Okay, but this is some of what he says, for instance. They amplify our addiction to distractions and so splinter our perception of place and time. Okay, and they do tend to amplify our addiction to distractions. Right? If you come to buy, and I'm not, because I really don't care, and I'm not going to advocate or lobby for it one way or the other, but if you come to church with a paper Bible in your hand, the biggest distraction is going to be writing on an offering envelope or looking at the maps in the back of the Bible. If you come to church with your cell phone in your hand and your Bible there, there are a trillion distractions. Right? So I know that the sin is in my heart, but I also know that that cell phone amplifies the distractedness of my world. Okay. Secondly, he says they push us to evade the limits of embodiment and thereby cause us to treat one another harshly. What he's dealing with there is the fact that, right, we are a lot more inclined to post things on Facebook that are nasty and snarky than we are to look somebody in the eye and be nasty and snarky. So they do not necessarily contribute to a kinder, gentler world. And, right, I mean, here's one place where I really am glad I'm old. Hasn't the world of bullying changed? You know, I went to school, of course there were bullies, You had a couple of options. You worked really hard to avoid them, or you went out behind the school building and you manned up and you tried to take care of it, and right? Now we have kids being bullied to the point of suicide, nonstop, constant haranguing. This is one of the downsides, right? This is human nature registered on the stuff. They feed our craving for immediate approval and promise to hedge our fear of missing out, right? My wife was talking. she was just laughing. I was telling this to Steve and Mary Wednesday night of church. I don't even remember how we got on the conversation, right? My wife sews. Most of what my wife sews for are young girls, teenage girls, high school age girls. They will show up at our house, stand on the porch, and send my wife a text and go, "We're here." They don't knock. They send a text, "We're here." I don't even know what to say. Well, you know, I guess that's a little bit lost on us because we've worked to put a doorbell down in the basement because my wife works from home. So when you ring the doorbell, it doesn't just ring upstairs, it rings in the basement. And so we're just kind of going. But on the other hand, folks, think of what this could do for door-to-door soul winning. Right? If we could just get a list of people's cell phones number, we could start texting the gospel to them. Knock, knock, are you there? Hey, we're from Westwood Heights Baptist Church. And he goes on, I'm really going to get done with it. I'm just kind of winding this down. He says, they undermine our literary skills and making it increasingly difficult for us to identify ultimate meaning. I don't remember even where I saw it, but somebody was making a joke out of it that if you go back 5,000 years, people were writing in picture images, cuneiform, and today we're writing in emojis. And we think we've advanced. They definitely have changed our literary skills, haven't they? He goes on to argue, you know, they offer us a buffet, and I didn't go extensively through those. They offer us a buffet of produced media and tempt us to indulge in visual vices. And this is where I had started with this. How many of you know who Logan Paul is? Right? And I mean, because I'm going to guess for most of us, we don't subscribe to any YouTube channels. And we probably don't think, hey, I wonder if we could find that on YouTube. Right? You know, maybe we could find it on maybe we could find it on Netflix. Right? And then if you're like me, it's like, oh golly, what a hassle Netflix is. How do I get to Netflix? So And then he says they overtake and distort our identity and tempt us toward unhealthy isolation and loneliness. And yes, I have loneliness misspelled there. I apologize. Yes, that is. Thank you. I think the Bible says let the women keep silent in the churches. That's what I think it says. At least that's what my electronic version says. All right. So that's what I got. I mean, you know, folks, did I resolve anything? I don't know where we're going to be. I mean, again, I am expecting that we are going to increasingly incorporate aspects of technology into the ministry. Sometimes willingly, sometimes unwillingly, but you know, I don't want us to make a concerted effort to become the 21st century version of the Amish, you know, where we have retreated from the world. On the other hand, I mean, there's nothing cutting edge about us. And so to pursue the novelty of some newest technology because it is the newest thing, I don't think we want to be there either. Okay, questions, comments, observations?